Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne. We're broadcasting live from the 15th annual CBC Alumni Open. Over 300 golfers, and they've raised over $3 million. John Bomarito is going to join us in about 15 minutes, but right now, a special guest with us. His name is Luis Sharp, and if you're a football fan in St. Louis, you know that name. 189 games played in the NFL, 189 games started in the NFL. A three-time Pro Bowler, a first-round draft choice, and as Jim Hanifin told us a couple of months ago, he was the practically perfect offensive lineman. Luis, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you, gentlemen. Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, what brings you to St. Louis this weekend? And move that mic a little closer to your mouth there. There we go.
Brings me to St. Louis this weekend, Awaken Project. It's a nonprofit. And what they do through music and education, they take a message of hope to our, as you know, with the opioid crisis here in this country, children are dying, overdosing in unprecedented numbers. And so they are a nonprofit that goes into the schools and share with these kids education that they don't have to indulge in opioids and they can live a productive life. And, of course, me having some issues with substances and now recovered, I can go and share my testimony, my story, and bring a message of hope.
When do you get to the point where you want to share your story? Because I'm sure for some folks, they're like, well, I don't want anybody to know. And right. Then when they do know, like, yeah, but I still don't want to talk about it. When did you say this is something that it's a calling?
Well, it is a calling because my life has been saved because of my irresponsible living and in trouble with the law. I was shot on two separate occasions, both times doctors amazed that I survived the shootings. Got beat down in prison, spent a week in the hospital as a result. And the fact that I have my faculties today and am not ashamed of the mistakes that I've made. And now I, you know, what was my greatest curse has now turned into my best blessing. And I can go into the community and share my story and give somebody hope that they, too, can lose the desire to use drugs, stop using drugs, and live a different life. You know, that inspires me. That helps me stay on track more so than the people I share the message with.
What led you to it? You had life by the tail, first-round draft pick, loved by everybody in a football community, a handsome guy. What led you to it?
Well, as many athletes, the transition from being a celebrity, making millions of dollars, having that bond with your teammates for all of those years into the real world, you know, you just dropped off and you're alone. And so the transition, I think, was the most difficult part. And, you know, as you said, I had the adulation and the respect of my peers and the community, but I never knew who I was or liked who I was. So those two factors were contributors, I believe.
Luis Sharp, former Big Red, part of the move to Phoenix, right? Made it to a Pro Bowl the last year that the football Cardinals were in St. Louis.
Yeah, I remember that.
Take us back a little bit to that transition. So you're drafted here, you're living in St. Louis, and then, oh, by the way, we're moving. And there was a period there, Bob Wallace has told us, could have been Baltimore, could have been Phoenix. What about as a player? What was that transition like?
Well, I remember having bittersweet memories. I was looking forward to starting new in Arizona. But, boy, my ex-wife, she was my wife at the time, we loved the St. Louis community. We had formed relationships with many in the community, our neighbors, business interests in the community. And we were very comfortable and happy living our lives here as a young family. So I remember having bittersweet memories when the move was announced.
How about the collisions and playing on that offensive line? Was Lawrence Taylor the scariest creature you had to deal with, or was it Ed Tuttle Jones? Who did you not want to see across from you?
Well, it wasn't that I didn't want to see LT. I look forward to facing LT because, you know, as being a pedestrian losing franchise at the time, never making the playoffs, we didn't get a lot of national exposure with the Cardinals. So for an offensive lineman like myself, going to the big city, the bright lights, New York City, playing against a Lawrence Taylor, that was my opportunity to shine and let the rest of the world and my compatriots know that, you know what, I'm just as good as this guy, so remember me when it comes time to vote for Pro Bowls. But he was a monster, and he was someone that I lost quite a bit of sleep the week that we played here, the New York Giants.
Let's set this up so people know. As an athlete, when you played, you were 6'5", 275?
I played between 275 and 300, yeah.
And what did you think you ran the 40 in? Because you were an athlete.
I ran the 40 coming out of college at 4.85.
Wow, at almost 300 pounds.
At almost 300
pounds.
That's
insane. Gosh.
I had speed. And that was my strength. My strength was my quickness, my speed. I wasn't one of these guys that could lift the entire weight room in the weight room. You know, it was quickness, speed, and, of course, you know, studying my intelligence that allowed me to become an all-pro, a Pro Bowl player in the NFL.
Did you have a year with Dierdorf before he retired? I'm trying to think, when you came in, was there a little transition there?
I played with Dierdorf, Jim Hart, Mel Gray,
sure.
Roger Worley. You guys remember those names?
Absolutely. I was just wondering, though, as Dierdorf as a lineman, he was towards the end of his career.
Did he play center with you?
He played center.
Yeah.
Jim Hanifin moved him to center. Tootie Robbins and I.
Big Tootie.
Were drafted, and Tootie became the right tackle, and I was the
number
left
73, Frank. That's Tootie,
right.
Robbins.
Which was Ernie McMillan's number before that. What was your what's your best Jim Hanifin story?
That you can tell on the radio.
Jim Hanifin story. What a great guy. You know, the thing I remember most about Coach Hanifin, what a mentor. What an excellent mentor as far as offensive line play. Very knowledgeable. A great teacher. A great motivator. And just the techniques and the mental approach that you need to take, the toughness that you needed as an offensive lineman are the things that I remember most. And, you know, I learned most from Coach Hanifin.
Not a lot of NFL players that were born in Cuba. Give us the backstory for those who have maybe heard it but forgotten. Give us the story there.
Born in Cuba in 1960, and we came to the States. My brother and I have a younger brother. We came to the States at the age of, I was 5, my brother was 4, and it was during the Johnson presidency, and they had some type of agreement with the Cuban government. I remember my father came to the States 2 years before we did and secured work in the automobile industry in Detroit, Michigan, and sent for his family. And it was tough transitioning from a different country. I don't even remember how I learned the English language. They say that when you're young, you know, it's a lot easier. But we used to get chased home. We used to get beat up. Kids can be mean when you're different. So that I do remember.
Did you get big enough that you could beat him back?
I mean, absolutely. My father.
I would have taken names and said, you know what, I'm growing.
That's right. And I beat the neighborhood bully up that kept bullying me and never had a problem from there forward.
Speaking of fights, you almost died in prison after that violent altercation. Can you tell our audience what happened?
Yeah, there was a dispute between one of the heads of the African-American race and the Caucasian race. They had a gambling dispute, and we were outnumbered in the institution there. And so there was just a race riot, and I got caught up in it. I got beat down and broke my orbital bone and concussion and spent the week in the hospital. But, you know, the God that I served protected me. And so that was, in essence, what took place.
You talked about the fear, knowing you're going to face LT. I would think, even if you're a big, strong guy, being in prison, there would be fear all the time. I mean,
people mess with you?
No, people didn't mess with me because I minded my own business. I treated everybody with respect. And one of the things I did do while I was incarcerated was I worked out. I worked out fervently every morning. They didn't have weights in the penal system in Arizona. But I did a lot of push-ups, dips, and sit-ups just to keep myself ready so I wouldn't have to get ready.
You're 59 now. You played at 275. What's your weight?
I'm about 235 now.
Wow.
Yeah, I work out daily and watch what I eat.
Can you run? What are your legs like?
No,
now?
My legs. The knees are gone. The legs are gone. The legs are gone.
So I want you to tell our listening audience how you're spending your time. In addition to this charity that you're involved with here, you give a lot of talks. In fact, we did a television story on it, on you recently, and we showed, you know, you speaking to the kids, you know, don't do what I did, and you tell your story all over the country.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's, you know, I found true purpose and significance and usefulness in being transparent about the mistakes that I've made and the losses I've suffered. Particularly in this nation, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Arizona Cardinals, and this past weekend they had starting defensive tackle that got into an altercation at a strip club where he pointed a gun at one of the strippers, and the Cardinals had to release him. And just Saturday night, I believe, their executive vice president was arrested on a DUI charge. And so, you know, people like myself that have been there and have had that happen, you know, we can speak directly into those people's and the problems that they're having and give them hope that, you know what, if I can overcome, been where you've gone and traveled that path, and I can overcome and find a way to live a different life as possible for you too. And that gives me, as I said earlier, it gives me the strength, more strength to continue on the path that I'm on by giving it away.
And you're talking primarily to younger kids, is that right? Is there any chance to get in front of, like, rookies or NFL? Is there any way to work with
the
league?
Well, you know, that's one of the things. I'm going to reach out to the Cardinals today and let them know that, hey, I'm available. I'm available. You got these rookies and, you know, that feeling of invincibility, and it's not going to happen to me. You know, they need to know that, you know, there are consequences to actions that you take. And you need to consider, I mean, you have a great opportunity to play in the most iconic sport in this nation. And you always need to mind your P's and Q's and not get involved, as several of the Cardinal members did this past weekend. And now they're going to have to face the consequences.
Because you're at a good spot in your life right now with peace, you're a Christian, you have a lovely girlfriend over here.
Life, well, thank you.
What was her first name?
Her first name is Tamika.
Tamika, lovely lady.
Yes.
Are you? If you had to,
it took Frank to introduce her. Now, yes. Louise, come on. There she is.
If you had to do it all over again, right, would you do it all over again and go through that tough journey that you had to go through to get to where you are now? Because you appreciate it and you're helping people.
Well, I can't say that I have any regrets, because I do like where I'm at today. But if I knew what was ahead, obviously I would have made some different choices. I don't know if that answers.
Could have made it a little easier on yourself, right?
Well, it would have. Yeah, exactly. I would have made it a little
easier. But you wouldn't be the man you are now, because you've been sharpened.
True. That's why I say I have no regrets.
Yeah.
And can you pin it down from a football sense? Was there a favorite moment on the field, or where a moment where you said, man, I moved to this country as a little kid, and look at me now, I'm in a Pro Bowl? Or I know there was a lot of winning, unfortunately, with that franchise. Really close in 84. We still talk about Neil O'Donoghue missing the kick against the Redskins.
Against the Redskins, yeah.
Yes.
How about the call that they made? It was with E.J. Jr. It sacked Theismann.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
That's right.
And they gave like a person, just an outrageous call. Yeah.
I'm glad he's not over it either, because Jimmy over there, I said Neil O'Donoghue.
Absolutely.
And I'm still thinking, because that was, I love that team. You got Roy Green.
Yeah, we had it all. I mean, we would have won the NFC East if we beat
right.
The
You know
Michigans.
What? It's the most amazing thing about you is you're one of the few football Cardinals ever that actually got millions out of the Bidwells. So, I mean,
well, yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, they paid you. They didn't pay anybody else.
But you know what? And that's what I was just talking, Keith Wortman.
Number 62.
Yeah, he and I were together, and we were just talking about how much salaries have changed now, because we sacrificed. We went on strike twice to get unfettered free agency, and the benefits that today's players have were on the backs of people like myself, my former colleagues, and we went on strike. So now that they have the ability to go and sell their services to the highest bidder, and they have better benefits. So they're making a whole heck of a lot more than we did.
What year did you retire?
1994.
94, okay, because I was with Jackie Smith the other day, and he didn't go to Canton, and he said there's a group of older Hall of Famers who are trying to band together, because the deal that Gene Upshaw cut stops at 93.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody who retired before 93 is sort of, yeah, over there, and then the better money kicks in if you retired after. He said Upshaw cut that deal, and all these older guys now who kind of need it are left out in the cold.
Yeah, the pension, we're fighting for pension parity with the current players. They make probably three times what we do with their pension. And we are saying that, you know what, we made the game. The reason the game is what it is today is because of people like Jackie Smith, people like Dick Butkus, Lawrence Taylors.
Yeah.
Ditka. You know, and we want our pension benefits to be equal with the current players. We don't feel like we're asking too much.
Are you collecting on your pension now?
Yes, sir, I am.
You could start at like 55 or what?
You can start earlier than 55. Obviously, the longer you wait,
the more
you get. But, you know, the mortality rate is really high for former NFL players. I think we die on average at 57 years old.
Really?
And I don't know the whole story, but Jackie was saying some of the requests now, or not the demands, but the hope, He said it's not even big numbers that they're asking for some of these guys who are in their 70s right now.
We're not asking for any of the benefits. I mean, their benefits are exponentially greater than what we receive. All we want is just pension parity.
Good stuff. Luis, honored to have you here. Thank you so much for stopping by.
It's always great to see you, Frank.
All right.
And my friend,
Martin. That's okay. It's good
to see
you.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Luis Sharp joining us. We'll take a short timeout. When we come back, we're going to be joined by John Bomarito.